that we eliminate our single biggest expense, which is taxes. For us, this is really a passion project. I mean, our goal is to help as many doctors and high-income professionals achieve financial freedom by taking advantage of all the benefits that real estate provides, including and especially the tax benefit. If you have a mentor showing you what to do and help, they help you avoid the mistakes, then you can get to your goal so much faster.
You're listening to Copeland Morgan Media, your source for investment property analysis, education, and advice. Find us online at copelandmorgan.com.
Welcome back to the Tampa Bay Real Estate Investors Podcast by Copeland Morgan Media. I'm your host, Jeff Copeland, and with me today is Kenji Asakura of Semi-Retired MD. He has a fascinating story. Coming from a physician working in a hospital to a real estate investor to teaching other real estate investors. And I can't wait to dive into that. Before we do, I want to put in a quick plug. Today's episode is brought to us by Upside Title in St. Petersburg, Florida. It's a relatively new title company, but not new staff. I've known Robin Turner. They're the owner for at least 10 years and done probably hundreds of transactions with her. So if you're looking for a title company to process a closing here in Florida, look into Upside Title in St. Petersburg. Kenji, welcome to the show. This was a long time coming. I know we went back and forth with scheduling, and I'm thrilled to have you with us today.
Hey, Jeff. Really glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Sure. And you're coming to us from Puerto Rico, correct?
Correct.
How's the weather down there?
Oh, it's great. It's pretty much the same all the time. It's beautiful Caribbean weather. And we're just loving it down here.
And I know one of the reasons you guys moved to Puerto Rico was for the tax benefits. I'd love to dive into that a little later on. But first, I'd love to just kind of hear your, you know, what I refer to as like your origin story. I mentioned you are or were a physician working in hospitals, and you've pivoted to this career focused on real estate. So why don't we go back to like medical school? How did Kenji get to where he is today?
Yeah, for sure. So I'd actually say that maybe it even goes back to college when I went to UPenn and surrounded by all these Wharton guys and girls, and going into, you know, iBanking and management consulting. And so surrounded by that group really got me interested in business in general. And so my path to going to medical school was pretty much set because my dad was a doctor. It was the only path that I really thought about. And so I did go to medical school. But while in med school, I was so interested in all these other things. I worked in the Senate for a summer doing health policy at a really interesting time when they developed HIPAA. They were also working on a number of other really exciting legislation. Also worked with a number of different community organizations, writing grants for them. And then actually worked on my first startup during medical school in my fourth year. So I was always kind of doing a lot of different things in addition to my medical studies. And in fact, after doing an internship, I ended up going to McKinsey & Company and working for 5 years doing management consulting before going back to medicine. And so really kind of my career path's been going back and forth between business and medicine. And now it is mostly business focused on real estate investing, as well as teaching other doctors and high-income professionals how to invest in real estate. But, you know, I'm still board certified, and right now I'm not working clinically, but I was working as recently as October of 2020 in the midst of COVID. So definitely.
So you're not too far removed.
Yeah, it's still there, still board certified, still maintaining all my credentials, and still could pick up a shift anytime if I wanted to.
I find it interesting that everybody thinks that doctors are wealthy. Doctors are rich, right? Well, I think it's fair to say that most doctors are high wage earners, but the part that people don't see is you work 80 hours through your residency and through training. You may take on hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt and student loans, and then you get out and you go to work as a doctor, and now you're still working 80 hours a week, and now you have to deal with insurance billing, and you know there's just not as much margin in some of these things as that there used to be. And it's really easy to kind of burn out because you're working 68 hours a week, you're in debt, and you're like, I'm a doctor now. Where is this financial freedom that comes with this high income? And so I'm really fascinated by how you've managed to kind of dig your way out of that and how you're now helping other people do that. So can you speak to that in terms of the challenges that many medical professionals, you know, physicians and dentists and otherwise face, you know, from sort of a financial standpoint, especially in the first, you know, 5 years or whatever of their career, and how to kind of focus on the long term and get out of that with real estate?
Yeah, if I were to pick a word to describe kind of what it feels like when you get out, I'd have to say like it just feels grueling. It's like you are, you know, like you said, the hours are long. There's a lot of pressure. There's professional pressure, right? I mean, you're taking care of patients. There's stress from that perspective. There's also stress of threat of litigation. There's also, like you said, all the billing and things like that you have to deal with. So, you know, what I think a lot of people in their minds, they have this vision of a very different career and a very different experience. And when you get out, it's a bit shocking how grueling it is. And I think that's the reason why so many doctors are burning out. And I think especially now with COVID, that added even more pressure. And like I said, I was taking care of patients during that time at the height of COVID. And yeah, for sure, I could just see in my colleagues' eyes just the grueling nature of it, the suffering. I can certainly see from the outside looking in, somebody could be like, well, I you guys are making like, you know, over six figures, you know, you must be doing great. You're doing so much better than most people. But, you know, you also have to realize that we didn't start our careers till much later in life. We're also coming in with multiple six figures of debt. And you know, there's a lot of that delayed gratification, right? A lot of our friends have been, you know, going out having fun since they were, you know, graduated from college, or maybe even before, during college, they were having fun. They weren't maybe studying as much as we were, but, you know, and then they get out and they have a job and they're making an income, right? But for us, a lot of us, you know, we're delaying that salary until we're 30. And so that's when we're starting to finally make some money. And so it's natural that a lot of doctors will put some golden, we call them golden handcuffs. You know, you buy the nice house, you buy the nice car, because you have that pent up kind of, you know, demand. You just want to go out and buy those things. And because you don't want to, you're done with delayed gratification. And so that's, I think, where a lot of doctors kind of get themselves into trouble right away, is they go get that nice house, they go get that really nice car, which they've been wanting for so long. They've seen their friends driving those cars like for so long. And so I think that's what happens. And add to that, just the long hours and trying to start a family. So it's just a lot of pressures and not as rosy as it may appear from the outside.
Yeah. And also learning how to run a business in many cases, whether you're a doctor, a lawyer, a CPA, or any profession, you know, they teach you in medical school how to practice medicine. They teach you in law school how to practice law, but they don't teach you how to run a practice. And so that's another challenge that a lot of professionals, I think, are a little bit shocked by as well. I'm a lawyer now, or I'm a doctor now. Well, okay, you've got to generate leads. You've got to run payroll. You've got to set up all your stuff. You know, there's all this administrative and marketing and accounting that happens behind the scenes. And in many cases, professionals aren't really prepared to jump into the business world either. Like you, fortunately, it sounds like you were, but a lot of people who did the traditional medical school, law school, CPA, you know, I could go on and on with the professions, but having to get out of school and then practice is a shock to a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's probably one of the biggest changes that happened with medicine is that because so many doctors were unprepared coming out and starting a business, starting a practice, that what ended up happening, the trend is actually more and more doctors are actually employed. They're W-2 earners, I'm sure we'll talk about more of this later, but being a W-2 employee, making a high salary, you don't have access to a lot of tax benefits. You're usually paying the highest tax rates. And so that makes it difficult. Again, I'm sure a lot of people aren't feeling sorry for doctors, but still, like, if you remember, you got that debt you got to pay for, you got that car payment, that house payment that you waited so long to get, and then now you're taxed at the highest rate. It is your single biggest expense, and so That trend, I think, is a result of, like you were saying, doctors were unprepared when they came out because they were not prepared to run a business. And a lot of them didn't do a great job with it. So practices get acquired. So now they're working for somebody else. And you know, as you probably know, it's at the end of the day, it's more fun, I think, working for yourself than working for somebody else, right? So being an employee. So I think that's one of the other big shift that I think has contributed to doctors not enjoying their profession as much, as that they're having to report to somebody else and report to somebody else's expectations and report to, you have to, all this paperwork is a result of being employed by somebody.
Sure. So for somebody who's listening and maybe they just graduated from medical school, or they just graduated from law school, or they just got their CPA, degree and they're getting ready to go out into the world, what are some steps they can take early on to avoid some of these pitfalls and also to set themselves up for long-term success from a financial standpoint?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think for me, the number one thing is education. Like you have to learn, don't abdicate responsibility of your finances to somebody else. Don't rely on, and don't assume that you are not able to learn about finances. You absolutely can. And so what I would say is take a real interest in your finances. Take a real interest in something, like if it's stocks, that's great. If it's crypto, if it's real estate, whatever it is, take a real interest in it and just learn. It's actually not that difficult. It's not as hard as, everything you had to do to become a lawyer, everything you had to do to become a doctor, everything you had to do to become a dentist. It's so much easier. But you do want to make sure that, you learn from the right people. Surround yourself with the, good mentors, people who know what they're talking about, people who care about your well-being, and are willing to take you under their wing and show you the way, right? It's so much easier to have somebody show you how to do something than to try to figure things out from scratch. So I would say, go find some mentors and learn from them is I think the absolute number one thing, because that encompasses everything. It's like, I could say, go learn real estate, but that's not going to be as good as go learn from the person who understands how to invest in real estate, as well as a whole bunch of other stuff. And you're going to be set if you do that.
Sure. Well, that's a perfect segue into your organization, Semi-Retired MD. What is it? And you're teaching people. Just to tell us about Semi-Retired MD. How did it start? What are its mission, vision, goals? What are you guys doing over there?
Yeah, so we started in 2018 as a blog. And then since then, we've added a podcast, Doctors Building Wealth. And then we got into courses because, what we realized was that we were giving all this free education on our blog and our podcast. And what was so interesting, we were actually helping so many people, like one-on-one, it's like one-on-one coaching, helping them. But what we realized is that at the end of the day, you can give people free stuff. And just the majority, I'd say more than 9 out of 10 people. So like 99 out of 10 people, or 99 out of 100 people would take that free information that we gave them and take no action. And so I think what we realized is a few things is that one is that, part of that transformation is in that transaction, right? And so paying for something really motivates you to do the work, right? It's like, hey, I invested in this, maybe your spouse is going to hold you accountable for that, the fact that you spent money on something. And so you're going to do the work. You're much more likely to do the work. The other thing we realize is that, helping people in an unstructured way is not as helpful as just laying it out step by step, right? And helping people make progress in little steps. And in the end, it's like that Atomic Habits book, right? You make a 1% improvement every day. By the end of the year, you're going to make a 365% improvement, right? So you're going to make huge improvements by making tiny incremental improvements every day. And so that's what we realized. And that's why we developed a course that runs, 7 to 8 weeks, because in that time frame, we can help them make those incremental improvements. And at the end, they will have made significant progress where they're going to feel confident about going out and buying an investment property and doing as well as an experienced investor. And that's really our goal, is to make them feel confident enough that they can go toe to toe with an experienced investor and not feel like, you know, they're missing out or they're like getting the bad deals. So that's kind of what we really work on. You know, for us, you know, we achieve financial freedom with our own real estate portfolio. So for us, this is really a passion project. I mean, our goal is to help as many doctors and high-income professionals achieve financial freedom by taking advantage of all the benefits that real estate provides, including and especially the tax benefits, because a lot of that, we were just talking about high-income professionals, a lot of them are W-2 employees, very, very few tax benefits for that group of people. And real estate is a great way to unlock some of those tax benefits.
Awesome. So the name semi-retired MD implies that if you're a physician, you can replace some of your income and become semi-retired. Maybe you work half-time or 3 days a week or whatever. And is that kind of the path that a lot of your students end up taking?
Yeah, totally. And the name, it really came from my wife calling me semi-retired. She was like, oh, you know, Kenji's semi-retired. You know, that's what she would tell our friends and stuff, because, you know, from our real estate, you know, we had that sure. real estate cash flow and the tax savings. So that's kind of where the name came from. And yeah, that really is the idea and the vision, is that, you know, we're not sitting here saying like people should quit medicine or quit dentistry or quit law. That's not what we're saying. We're saying that we want to give you the freedom of choice, right? The freedom to be able to say, look, you know, I'm going to take a sabbatical and I'm not going to worry about it. We have friends who, you know, just recently traveled to Europe for several months, and from the cash flow from their long-term rentals and their short-term rentals, they were able to, you know, basically not have a drop in their income for the year, you know, even though they took off 3 or 4 months from their clinical practice. And so that's really the vision, is to give people the freedom and the choice to be able to practice law or medicine the way they want to, not because they have to. And it's so interesting that what we saw is that it's just a mindset shift. Even if you are working, continuing to work full time, the people who have some of that cash flow coming in and they tapping into the tax benefits, they actually feel better going into work, because they know that they're choosing to be there, not because they have to be there. And that just mindset shift actually makes a big difference, a bigger difference than you think. And that's really the kind of what's really behind, you know, the whole semi-retired part.
Sure. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but your wife, Leyte, was a physician as well, correct?
Correct. Yeah. And so, yeah, we both stopped working clinically at the same time, October of 2020. For her, it was, you know, she was pregnant with our third child. So she, you know, she was getting to the point where it's like, okay.
She has three full-time jobs now.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. She's doing it all. She's actually the CEO of our semi-retired MD. So she does it all. She's incredible. And so she was at the point where, yeah, being the CEO of, multi-million dollar business, and also a third child on the way. It just was like, okay, this doesn't end COVID, right? That just doesn't make sense. And so, yeah, I mean, we had that freedom to be able to cut back and basically go to moonlighting. And so, that's what she does. She's in the same boat as me. We both are maintaining our board certifications, and we can just, you know, jump back into clinical medicine if we have to.
Awesome. And one of the reasons I wanted to point that out is you guys are fond of saying that we have successfully replaced our physician income for two practicing physicians with our income from real estate. And I like the way that you say, well, we have this much income from cash flow, but yeah, we also have this much in tax savings because of the real estate and the tools that you use within the world of real estate. And you've managed to replace both of your incomes. But I also think it's worth pointing out that it doesn't have to be this massive portfolio. It's not like you guys have a million apartments that you're renting out. And so just for somebody who's trying to wrap their head around this, I'm curious, you know, how many rental units do you have approximately? And, you know, what is the realistic number? How many rentals do you have to own to offset somebody's full-time income? And I know a lot of people are probably wondering that in the back of their head.
Yeah, and it's a great question. And some of this has actually shifted recently, and I'll give you the reason why. But for us, to answer your question, we do have 150 units right now. I would say we achieved that financial freedom when we were at 40 units, actually.
Yeah, and that's such a doable number. And that's why I wanted to dive into that. Like, you can wrap your head around acquiring 40 rentals, and some you can do multifamily, and you might get a 10-plex and a 4-plex. You know, 40 is very doable, but I think it's worth sitting down or stating again, with 40 rentals, you can offset your physician income, and that's very doable within a couple of years, I think, in my thoughts, you know, timeline in terms of acquiring properties. So
absolutely. And the shift that I was talking about now is that a lot of our students, we call them students, people who go through our courses, a lot of them have added short-term rentals to their portfolio. So one short-term rental in some cases can make, you know, anywhere from $80,000 to over $100,000, right, in cash flow. And so the beauty of that is that you can, in addition to your long-term rentals, if you can add a short-term rental or two, you can get to that number so much faster. And that's what we're seeing, is that we have people who set their goals. It's one of the first things that we have them do in the course, because obviously if you set goals, you're more likely to achieve them, right? So we have them set goals. A lot of them have these goals of replacing their income in 5 years, 7 years. Ours was actually 7 years, and we did it in three. And so what's amazing is our students are doing it in a year and a half. And it's because of this combination of long-term rentals and short-term rentals, and the layering in of the short-term rentals with the higher cash flow is helping them achieve their goals so much faster. And so it's really exciting to see. The other thing that we found is that, and this, we actually wrote an article about this, but we say our students will be so much more successful than us. And it is so true, because literally if you have a mentor showing you what to do and they help you avoid the mistakes, then you can get to your goals so much faster. And that's really what we're about, and what our courses are about. That's our goal, is to help you eliminate those mistakes so you can grow your wealth much faster.
And you guys recently added a short-term rental course to your package of course offerings for that very reason, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So we have a long-term rental course and a short-term rental course. And so, yeah, it was really kind of just out of the need from our students, just because so many more were adding these short-term rentals to their portfolio. So we were like, okay, yeah, we have to obviously educate. And because I will say right now that it's very important for anybody who's thinking about getting into a short-term rental, you really have to think about the potential downsides. And you also have to realize that, I would say a lot of these short-term rentals they're not profitable, right? So you really have to know what you're doing in order to make sure that you're going to get that level of income that you're expecting. Also, the other thing you have to think about is with the potential for a downturn, you have to think about what could happen to single family home prices. That's something else you need to think about. So what we teach in our course is we really help them think about mitigating that risk, thinking ahead to what if this happens, how can I mitigate the risk of the value of my property going down? How can I how can I minimize the chance that my short-term rental is not going to be very profitable? And so those are the types of things that we really focus on in our course.
Sure. Which is probably a good time to ask, if somebody wants to find more information about these courses that you offer, where do they go? Where do they find all this stuff?
Yeah, best place to go is semiretiredmd.com. And then there's a section called Work With Us. In addition to those two courses, we also have a bookkeeping course and also a conference that we do every summer.
Awesome. Yeah. And I'll be the first one to tell you that as a real estate broker and as a property manager, the well-educated clients are generally much, much easier to work with. You don't have to do as much handholding, or, you know, you're not starting out from step one. You're starting out a little further on down that educational path. So I absolutely salute what you guys are doing, and I hope you continue to do more of it. We've mentioned a few times, and we can't just leave them hanging out there. We've got to dive into it. The tax benefits of owning real estate for high income earners. And so I'd love to get your take on that and some things that people can start working towards, you know, even if maybe they can't sign up for a course right now or whatever reason, but they just want to know more about what we're talking about. So what are some of those tax benefits, and how does real estate lower your tax bill?
Yeah. So, you know, just to give you a sense, I mean, we were W-2 workers, and we have, for the last 7 years, we've sheltered all of our income, right? And so we paid zero in federal income taxes. We lived in a no income tax state. So it was just federal anyway. So no federal income taxes for 7 years. Now we're in Puerto Rico. So it's a different situation. Like, we don't actually have to buy real estate anymore to shelter our income, because living in Puerto Rico now, we have a lower tax rate as a result. But over the last 7 years, the idea here is that we eliminate our single biggest expense, which is taxes. And that helped us grow our portfolio that much faster. And when we were talking about earlier, when we say that we're replacing our income, we're saying the cash flow and the tax savings, we are adding those two things up, because the tax savings is real money in your pocket. If you withhold money from your income for taxes, and you use real estate to shelter your income, then come tax time, you get a tax refund. So that's real money in your pocket that you can use to reinvest. And that's really the best thing to do if you want to compound your money. You want to reinvest that money. And so the tax benefits are, one is there is a short-term rental tax benefit. In order to get that, you have to do something called materially participate in your short-term rental, which just means that you have to really be involved in that day-to-day operations of your short-term rental. So a lot of our students will self-manage their short-term rentals in the first year in order to get that tax benefit. In the second year, some of them will continue to self-manage, but others will pass it on along to a property manager in the second year, because in order to get the tax benefit, you just have to do it that first year. Now, the other way to do it with long-term rentals is something called real estate professional status. And that one is a little bit more involved. It does involve material participation, but it also involves a minimum threshold of 750 hours in real estate. And you also have to do more hours in real estate than any other job, right? So as a doctor, what I did back in 2015, when I first claimed real estate professional status, was that I actually cut back on my work first to half time, and then I switched to moonlighting. And therefore, real estate became my primary profession. And then I did the minimum 750 hours. I did more than that, actually. And you do have to keep track of that. And I also materially participated, which is being involved in the day-to-day operations. And if you can do that, then you can take the paper losses from your rentals and use that to shelter your income.
Yeah. And that should be like, we should have added sound effects or something, but you can take passive losses and offset your active income. That is really the underlying theme of these tax benefits, particularly the REPS status, real estate professional status. And so for most people, if you're working a full-time W-2 job and you make $100,000 in income, like you said, you're going to be in a very high tax bracket. You may be taxed 32% on that, 28%, somewhere in there. Let's say 30, make it easy for math. So on your $100,000 of income, you're going to pay $30,000 in taxes to the federal government. So you're left with $70,000 of your income after paying taxes. But if you buy an 8-unit apartment building and you fix it up, and you spend $30,000 on capital improvements that year or on repairs that year, and you take a $30,000 loss on the real estate, and you're able to claim real estate professional status and meet those requirements, that $30,000 loss offsets your gain on the other side. So it's essentially wiping out your tax bill of $30,000. Now, for most people who are not real estate professionals or can't hit these metrics that are required, you can't take passive losses against active gains. There are limits to it. And some you can carry forward to the next year. And it's all CPA stuff. It's complicated. Hire a good CPA if you don't already have one. But just that, the power of being able to take the real estate losses against your W-2 income is huge. And you mentioned it has to be your primary, in the sense that you have to work more in real estate than you do in your professional career as a doctor, dentist, lawyer, whatever it is. So there's usually two ways to do that. Like you said, you can cut way back on your actual practicing, whatever it is that you do, and you know, get 1 hour more in real estate. Or for some people who are married filing jointly, one spouse can continue to work full time in their profession, and the other spouse can kind of more quickly ramp up their real estate hours. And I know that's one way that a lot of people have been able to meet those requirements of the IRS, is by one spouse doing almost exclusively real estate stuff while the other spouse continues working.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that was our situation. You know, Leyte continued to work as a physician, and I was the one who became the real estate professional.
Yeah. And I just wanted to point out that when you said that, you were 7 years where you didn't pay any federal taxes, but you were both practicing medicine until October 2020. So, right. You know, for at least 5 or 6 of those years, you were working, you know, as doctors and wiping out your income tax bill. You know, it's huge. So the other thing that I'll just add to this discussion is it's not simple. So don't just go out and think you can do this yourself. You need to take a course, whether it's through semi-retired MD or somewhere else. And you need to have a really good CPA who understands the requirements and understands the real estate professional status, what it means and how it works and how you have to document it. And what are these requirements that you have to meet? Because you don't want to get it wrong and have the IRS come back and say, no, we're not going to honor that or, you know, make you have to pay back taxes or whatever. So it's a powerful benefit in the tax code, but it's something that you have to work with professionals on. And semi-retired MD is a great place to start. You guys also have a secondary group called semi-retired professionals. Is that just sort of a mirror? Do you offer the same courses through that subgroup, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we have two free groups. One is semi-retired professionals, and then the other one is semi-retired physicians. And so the physicians one is for MDs and DOs, and part of that is just. A lot of the physicians are accustomed in Facebook to kind of have their own groups, and that's kind of how that ended up happening. But we wanted to have a space for professionals because I'd say about, you know, maybe 15 to 20%, and I think it's probably growing. Actually, we just interviewed somebody for our summit this summer who's a corporate attorney who took our course, and so I'd say we have 15 to 20% who are non physicians taking our courses. And so it's, you know, I would say that when we say our courses are for, you know, it's doctors, but also high income professionals, because, you know, both groups are affected by the same kind of high tax rates, very few tax incentives, tax benefits, and therefore all the things that we teach apply to both groups. And so, yeah. And then the course itself is kind of like anybody can take the course. And that's why I was saying about 15 to 20% take of our course participants are non-doctors.
Gotcha. So you've mentioned it a couple of times, so I have to loop back to it. The summit in the summer, where is it? What is it all about?
Yeah, so it's called Fast Fire to Freedom Summit, and Fast Fire is an acronym that we created. Well, it's not an acronym. Sorry, it's FIRE, the Financial Independence Retire Early, but doing it quickly, right? Doing it because a lot of the FIRE movement, you know, it still takes some time, but this if you can implement some of these things, like we talked about short-term rentals and long-term rentals, a lot of our students are getting there in a couple of years. So it's a fast FIRE. And so that's what the summit is about. And so we take 4 days and we interview actually a number of our students. And we, you know, our goal is to educate and inspire and show people what's possible. So we have amazing stories of people who grew their portfolios to 60 units in less than 12 months, right? Other people who grew their short-term rental, they bought like 5 short-term rentals and have, you know, nearly $500,000 of income coming in from those short-term rentals. And they did that in less than 12 months. And so with these incredible stories, and it's not just about doing it quickly. We also talk about some of the challenges as well, because we want to keep it real. Because as you know, investing in real estate, you're going to get you're guaranteed to have some type of a curveball thrown your way, and just as in life. So absolutely, we want to keep it real. So we tell challenges, but also some success stories, and our goal is inspire and educate. And it's free. It's a free conference.
Sure. And is that a live in-person conference, or doing it online this year? How?
Yeah. So it's in the summer, it's mid-July. You can kind of, when you go to our website, you can, when you look at work with us, you can find out the exact dates. But it's a virtual conference, and it's 4 days in the summer.
Awesome. And we'll put a link to that in our show notes as well. So we talked about real estate professional status. But in real estate investing and accounting circles, all I hear about these days are the short-term rental loophole. And so that is yet another way that you can achieve significant tax savings, but without having to hit that 750 hours and you know, make it your primary job part. So what is the short-term rental loophole? How does that work? How can people possibly implement that? And I know we're not going to explain it all here on this episode, but just kind of in broad strokes, what is that?
Yeah. So this is actually something that can be applied to any business, really. It's like if you go out by a Subway, let's say a Subway sandwich shop, right? And you could be either active or passive. You could be behind the counter making sandwiches and be active. You could materially participate, or you could just hire a manager and be very passive, right? And so depending on whether you're active or passive, if your Subway loses money, if you're actively involved, then you can actually use those losses to shelter your income. And so it's the same thing with short-term rentals. Short-term rentals is considered less a rental property, but more of a business. And therefore, if you materially participate in that short-term rental business and you're actively involved, you're kind of self-managing, you're dealing with, like, you know, the guests, you know, you get 5-star reviews, you know, you deal with the cleaner, you do all those things, you're actively involved, right? You're like behind the counter at Subway making sandwiches, right? And so when you do that, you have losses, then you can use that to shelter income. Now when you run a business, you don't want to operate at a loss, right? You want to make it profitable. But with real estate, what's beautiful is that you can create paper losses, and that's with bonus depreciation. And so if you, as an example, if you buy, let's say, an $800,000 short-term rental, I know that's a big number, but $800,000 short-term rental, you can create a $200,000 loss using bonus depreciation with that one short-term rental. And therefore, that allows you to shelter $200,000 worth of income. And so that's how you create these paper losses. And if you materially participate, then you can use those losses to shelter W-2 income.
Yeah, and I believe to be considered a rental activity, there's like a 7-night average. So if you're doing a short-term rental and your average occupancy is for less than 7 nights, then you can material participate in that short-term rental business, and it's not considered a rental activity like a long-term rental by the IRS. And
right.
That's something to think about, because I know in a lot of your circles, people are talking about, oh, could we rent to like traveling nurses? And that's a great business model, but they usually need housing for 3 to 6 months, depending on the term of their contract. And so that's not going to qualify as a short-term rental activity in the eyes of the IRS.
Correct. Yeah. So in that situation, if you're doing a 3-month rental, so traveling nurses, typically contracts are 3 months in length, then you're not going to be less than 7 days, right? So you're not going to be in the short-term rental category. You're actually in the long-term rental category. So 8 days and more, it's going to be long-term rental category, according to the IRS. And therefore, yes, you would need to have reps, real estate professional status, if you're renting to traveling nurses and your average length of stay is greater than that 7 days. So yeah, absolutely. That's something that, you know, and that's the beauty, is that when you understand those tax, you know, the tax rules, you can actually use your long-term rentals and short-term rentals as little chess pieces. And you can take, for example, let's say that you actually make income from your short-term rental in the second year. Let's say you claim the benefit in the first year. In the second and third year, you hand it off to a property manager, but you're making great cash flow from your short-term rental. Well, that would be taxed as income unless you figured out a way to shelter it. Well, if you have a property manager, it's now passive income. And now you can go buy a long-term rental, which generates passive losses, and you can use those losses to offset the short-term rental passive income. And so you can kind of play the game a little bit with between short-term rentals and long-term rentals by moving them around like chess pieces.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of the beauty of the tax system in a way, is it's tax year by tax year by tax year, 1 year at a time for most people. It's, you know, January 1st through December 31st. So if you've had a rental for a couple of years and it's sort of stabilized and it's making you lots of money, that's awesome. That's the goal. But now go buy one that's run down and think about when you're going to close on it and when you're going to fix it up and schedule it in such a way that it offsets your income for that particular tax year, and then wash, rinse, repeat and do it again. And so I think just having an understanding of these tools and then how they apply to your annual tax situation is a huge sort of level up for a lot of real estate investors. Yeah, it's great to just get out there, buy some properties and build your portfolio, but do it strategically and be mindful of how it impacts your tax bill and the tax benefits that come along with it. Because sometimes if you pay for that roof on December 31st, it can make a huge difference on your tax bill than if you cut the check on January 1st of the next tax year. And so these are things you have to think about, especially as your portfolio grows and some of these decisions have huge, huge tax implications.
Absolutely.
Well, this has been awesome. Kenji, do you have anything you'd like to add before we get into some of our sort of closing questions?
No, I mean, I think that anybody listening to this, like thinking about it, I think ultimately, you can think about it all, for a long time, but ultimately you have to make a decision in order to take action to make progress. It's just like, working out. You could talk about it. I need to work out. I need to, eat better. But at some point, until you make that decision of like, I'm going to wake up every day and go run, or I'm going to go work out every day, until you make that decision, you're not going to make an improvement or change in your life. So I would say, go out, take action, go find that mentor, and away you go.
Yeah, that's a great point. But so many of these benefits are sort of cumulative, and had you started investing 5 years ago, you'd be so much better off now. But 5 years from now, you're going to be kicking yourself if you didn't start today. So they always say the best time to invest in real estate was 10 years ago. And the second best time is right now. And which brings us to one of our closing questions that we ask everyone. And market conditions, real estate market conditions are challenging throughout a lot of the country right now. And so one of the questions we like to ask our guests, because everybody brings a different perspective to the table, is where do you see the real estate market going, in the next 2 to 5 years?
Oh, wow. Yeah. that is a good question. Obviously we do think about this a lot and we think about it in the context of what if something happens? How can we prepare now? And so I feel like we've been preparing our students for a downturn sometime in the next year or two, possibly triggered by interest rates, possibly triggered by all this printing of money, causing inflation. So, I just came from a conference, a financial conference, where they interviewed five billionaires and got their opinions about what's going to happen. I'd say most people thought, downturns coming sometime in the next year or two is what they said. So, what I would say is that, we've been just preparing for it. And the way we've been preparing for it is making sure that we continually buy good deals, even with the deals feeling like they're few and far between. I think most people would agree it's harder and harder to find great deals, but continue to kind of like, don't change your criteria, keep that same criteria. Maybe pivot and work smarter, right? Like maybe instead of like we were talking about midterm rentals, could be a really great play. I think, especially if you can find a property in a smaller town, maybe close to a hospital that doesn't typically get a lot of nurses and doctors at that hospital. That's a great place. They're going to be bringing in travelers all the time because they can't staff up their hospitals well enough. And so that could be another great opportunity where you can actually get some great cash flow. And I think would be relatively recession resistant, right? So thinking ahead to the what I think is a downturn that's definitely coming and preparing ahead of time is absolutely essential.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point that there's two aspects you have to look at with real estate there. Well, three really, or more, but there's cash flow. How much money does the rental, the property bring in after income and expense, after paying the expenses, what's left? That's your cash flow. And that number doesn't tend to change a whole lot in a real estate market downturn. Rents might ratchet down, but they tend to ratchet, meaning they stay where they are. They don't typically drop, partly because leases are for 12 months. They're locked in. And so they don't trail or track the real estate sale prices like other indicators do. So you have your cash flow piece. You have appreciation. That's the another. That's the cherry on top, or the big, you know, hurrah at the end of owning real estate is 10, 20, 30 years down the road, you're going to see significant appreciation. And then that third leg is the tax benefits that we talked about here today. Well, the beauty of a real estate downturn, which in my opinion is no reason to panic, because you still have your cash flow, you still have your tax benefits. And unless you're planning to sell that property during the downturn, who cares what it's worth? You're going to keep it for 10, 20, 30 years. It will bounce back over that time frame. History has proven that it always does. So I think the other added bonus or benefit of any downturn that we do see is that deals will hopefully get a little easier to find. And prices may go down a little bit, and that actually makes it easier for people who are looking to acquire properties, who wouldn't want to see, you know, prices dip a little bit if you're looking to buy. When you're looking to sell, that's different. But most of our folks that we're working with are actively building their portfolio. So a downturn in the real estate market prices is nothing to panic about.
Absolutely. Our group is just waiting. They're ready, you know, and I think that that's the best thing you can do. It was probably my number one message in the very beginning, which is educate yourself, right? People always say, is this the right time to invest? I say, this is the right time to learn, right? Because if you can learn and be successful in this type of market, you're going to crush it when the downturn comes, because there are going to be so many great deals out there and everybody's going to be scared and they're not going to be buying, and you know, and you are. And so that's what really it's like, you know, we're working on the psychology part of what's very common. Fear is the common theme in recessions. And so, you know, really teaching our students to manage that fear. That's when I think, you know, that's when you get the real estate millionaires, right? People who can remain calm, control their fear, and go out there and make great investments.
Well, we see this all the time, and I know you do as well. So many people get stuck in that sort of, we call it analysis paralysis. I've analyzed it. I think it's a good deal, but I'm just not sure. And I'm scared to pull the trigger and deal's gone. You missed it. We have a page on our website dedicated to curing analysis paralysis. If you go to 5simpleformulas.com, it'll take you directly to that page. There's nothing to buy. It's a free little video and some tools you can use to help analyze properties. And we break it down to 5 formulas that you can use to tell whether a rental property is a good deal or not. But yeah, that's exactly hitting the nail on the head. Is be educated, be well informed, so that when you do analyze a deal and turns out it's a good deal, don't be afraid of it. Jump, go, move, you know, because somebody else will if you don't.
Absolutely.
So the other question, and this I think is super relevant to you because of what you do and because of your journey and what we've talked about here today, is what advice would you give to the Kenji of 10 years ago, to someone who's maybe in medical school or just graduated and just started working in a hospital, and they're drowning in debt, they're drowning in 80-hour work weeks, and they're trying to find some balance and some financial freedom and some light at the end of the tunnel. What do you wish you had known 10 years ago?
Yeah, so, you know, I started investing in 2001. And so, you know, I got caught up in the 2008 downturn in particular, but I was also investing back in 2001 as well. And And unfortunately, the first, you know, until I met my wife and until we started investing together, I feel like I just had the wrong strategy. I was just chasing shiny pennies and anything, you know, I was going for the home run, right? And I wasn't focused on tried and true, you know, buy and hold for cash flow and those types of, you know, the type of real estate we've been talking about. And so what I wish I told myself is, you know, go find somebody, right, who's doing what you want to do and who is just like killing it. Develop a relationship with that person. It doesn't have to be, you know, somebody who runs a course. It could be a real estate agent, right? It could be, you know, property manager, right? There's so many great, amazing people. I mean, it doesn't have to be just one person, right? And ultimately, that's how we learned. But I did wish I had somebody who I could have, I wish I had a deeper bench of people I could have turned to. Because even my wife and I, we had to figure things out ourselves a lot of times, even though we had some great team members, but we also didn't appreciate the value and the importance of those team members. So I'd say take care of your team members, value them, and they will take care of you back. Learn from them, because somebody like you, Jeff, or somebody like a property manager who's been doing it for 25 years, I mean, they've seen it all, right? So learn from them, you know, listen to them. And so that's what I would say, is like, go seek out and build those relationships is what I would say.
That is sage advice. And I think that's those are perfect words to kind of close on. I want to thank you so much for being with us here today.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Jeff.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Copeland Morgan Media Real Estate Podcast. As you can imagine, producing this great educational content takes a lot of effort and commitment on our part. We only ask one thing in return. Please subscribe to our podcast using your favorite podcast app or by visiting copelandmorgan.com/podcast. And remember, there's no greater compliment than referring us to a friend or colleague. Until next time, I'm Jeff Copeland.